The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We are back. Oh, my God, and everything's working. My levels might be a little funky. I'll do my best to stay on top of them. If you were here yesterday or tried to be here yesterday, you know that we had some major technical difficulties. Something came partially unplugged is the best I could figure out what happened. I tore the studio apart, rebooted everything, and put it all back together again, and lo and behold, it's working. So when in doubt, reboot. So here we are. It's Thursday. Welcome to it. Last night, CNN held their first climate forum because, of course, the DNC ruled that the candidates are not allowed to participate in an unsanctioned debate. God forbid, an extra debate. How horrible would that be for democracy? But it's okay because they can all be in a forum where what they did yesterday on CNN, starting at 5 p.m. for the next 7 hours. Yes, 7 hours. They followed one after the next after the next. Now, you know what? It was actually a better format than their bullshit debates where you get, you know, 1 minute to answer a question, 30 seconds to respond, and 15 seconds for a follow-up. That's not a debate. So they had this thing again. Who's going to sit through 7 hours of it? Now, I watched the ones I was interested in. I watched Joe Biden, and I watched Bernie Sanders, and I watched Elizabeth Warren, and I saw a few. I saw some Kamala Harris, and I saw bits and pieces of others. We'll get into it a bit, but a lot of stuff to talk about today. First of all, you know what? We need to start with the funny, because again, you're going to be pissed off about some of the things I'm going to tell you. So I don't know about you, but I wasn't even sure that Stephen Colbert was still on the air because we didn't have him because of the DirecTV blackout. And then he's been gone for 2 weeks. But, you know, that's the one thing you can be sure of. Income taxes, death, and Stephen Colbert will return to your television? I don't know. But all right, let's start with a laugh or two, shall we?
So we found charities where you can do your part. Go to ColbertLateShow.com and please be generous. And do not forget. Of course, Donald Trump is trying to help the Bahamas, the only way he knows, by being an old man yelling at wind. In the Oval Office, our weather tracker in chief explained why Dorian has been so hard to forecast.
It's a very erratic, a very slow, very powerful hurricane.
Wet.
Erratic.
Wet, too.
Slow, powerful, and destructive. It's like looking in a mirror.
But Trump wasn't interested in where the storm is going to go. He wanted to talk more about where the storm was going to go.
That was the original chart, and you see it was going to hit not only Florida, but Georgia. It could have was going toward the Gulf. That was what was originally projected.
Why? Why? Why, you ask, did Trump show a map with an outdated projection of Dorian's path?
Really?
Instead of one showing where the storm actually went? I'm glad I pretended you asked. remember last 2 days how we got into a disagreement with the National Weather Service where he tweeted the storm was going to hit Alabama and they said, what? No. Well, take a closer look at Trump's outdated map from last Thursday morning. He used a Sharpie to extend the path into Alabama. He gave the storm a boob job.
I tell you, a couple
Wait,
of high
here's
hard
the picture.
Ones.
Wait a minute, I got the picture here. I got it. I did this.
Before I did that, it was a Category 5. Now she's a Category 10.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So obviously, I don't think I'm talking out of school when I say that's an insane thing to do. But it could literally be a criminally insane thing because a lot of wonks online are pointing out that this breaks Title 18 U.S. Code 2074, which
says
it's illegal to knowingly falsely represent a forecast or warning issued by the Weather Bureau. Oh, my God, do you know what this means? We finally got him. We caught him.
Yeah, we did. That's a felony.
We finally caught Trump doing something wrong. Mr. President, you're going to weather jail.
If only.
Now, because of the fact that the president misinterpreted where the water would go, I'm calling this scandal Watergate. Trademark. Trade. At an event right after Trump's map presentation there in the Oval Office, a reporter asked him if he had altered the map. And Trump cranked his mouth settings to ramble.
It appeared to have been edited or something to include Alabama. Can you explain how that change was made?
No, I just know, yeah. I know that Alabama was in the original forecast. They thought it would get it as a piece of it. It was supposed to go, actually, we have a better map than that, which is going to be presented where we had many lines going directly, many models, each line being a model. And they were going directly through. And in all cases, Alabama was hit.
No, it wasn't.
I had an even better map than that one where the line, the line follows the hurricane's path through a maze. And it leads to a treasure chest full of delicious popcorn shrimp from Long John Silver's. Thank you for your service, Captain Silver's. He will be missed.
But Trump says that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has another map. Can we put that on the screen? No, we can't.
No.
Because the NOAA spokesperson just declined to address Trump's Dr. Dorian map and also declined to say whether Alabama was ever in Dorian's possible path. The NOAA spokesman then said, ring, ring. Oh, I got to take this. Bye-bye. It was just his hand. There was no phone. Mm. But the reporter pressed on.
That map that you showed today looked like it almost had like a Sharpie.
I don't know.
Oh, he did it.
I don't know.
You know how I know? Because Trump has never, ever, ever said he doesn't know anything. That's a sure tell that he knows something. It must be so easy to play poker with this guy.
Let me see what I got here. Let me see. I don't know. I do not have three queens. Or if anyone has a Sharpie, I do not have four queens.
Oh, God. Love, 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 love Stephen Colbert. Even though, you know, it's been like a month without him. So good to have him back. Okay. So now that we're past all that, I have some loose ends to wrap up with you. Remember on Tuesday, we came back from Labor Day weekend and spoke with an independent journalist, a guy named Mike Stark. Remember that conversation? He was arrested. He's somebody. He's one of those video journalists who goes around following campaigns, hoping to get something, you know, something questionable on videotape. I believe he's the one who got George Allen's macaca comment. I could be wrong, but this is the kind of work he does. So Mike Stark was hired by American Bridge, which is, you know, it's an organization on the left, but it's run by David Brock, who's a piece of shit. So some of their practices are somewhat questionable. But what Mike Stark did this day, there was nothing wrong with it. In fact, if you missed it, if you go to NicoleSandler.com and click on show archives or go NicoleSandler.com/9-3-19, that'll bring you to Monday's show where I posted a link to Mike's whole story, the video of what happened when he was arrested. he didn't do anything wrong. He was doing his job. Anyway, Mike Stark was, he had his day in court yesterday, and I got an email from him this morning. So here's what happened. He wrote, awful judge, former prosecutor, found, quote, beyond a reasonable doubt that off camera, Davidson didn't push me, even though 40 seconds earlier, we have her on film pushing me. And 2 seconds later, we have her on film with her elbow under my chin. She's 5'7", I'm 6 foot. Instead, the judge finds that I pushed her. I'm 230 pounds and she's 110. If I had pushed her, would she be standing with her elbow under my chin? It's like this judge has never seen a GOP political rally. Conviction came after we discredited as liars every single witness the prosecution put on the stand. I'm sickened the GOP finally got a conviction on me for assaulting a woman. Now I'm faced with the choice of spending thousands more on appeal or paying a $300 fine and letting the conviction stand. That's just sucky, however you look at it. And believe me, this administration is targeting progressive journalists and their families. This is just one tiny part of it. Unbelievable. The other thing I wanted to fill you in on, and I seem to have lost it. There was one other story that I was, well, closely following, which was the, you know, watching the climate thing last night and seeing Joe Biden, Joe Biden really needs to go home. So Joe Biden is one of the candidates who took the pledge to not accept any money from any fossil fuel executives or companies, to stay away from fossil fuel money. Well, at the debate last night, he was actually asked a question about a fundraiser he's scheduled to be at today. Here's the question and how he answered it. Would help if I turn the volume up.
Fossil fuel corporations, their executives, their trade and industry organizations, and their think tank front groups have waged a decades-long campaign of lying to the public about the science, and it has brought us to a crisis that threatens the entire human race. Now, I know that you signed the No Fossil Fuel Money Pledge, but I have to ask, how can we trust you to hold these corporations and executives accountable for their crimes against humanity when we know that tomorrow you are holding a high-dollar fundraiser hosted by Andrew Goldman, a fossil fuel executive?
He's not a fossil fuel executive, I'm told. He is not a fossil fuel executive. And the fact of the matter is that what we talk about is, what are we going to do about those corporations? What have we done? And everywhere along the way, for example, I've argued and pushed for us suing those executives who are engaged in pollution, those companies who are engaged in pollution. I've never walked away from that. I've also been one of those people who, when I was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, got involved in plans to be able to join people together in order to take on these corporate interests. When back in 1986, they entered one of the first climate plans that existed. PolitiFact said it was a game changer. I've been engaged in this from the beginning.
But Isaac's question is, will you hold fossil fuel corporations and executives who've lied to the public accountable?
Yes. And by the way, just like we did the tobacco industry that lied to the public, just like we did the opioid industry.
So how do you do that?
Well, the way you do that is you try to change the law.
All right. You notice he's not answering the question.
You try to change the law.
To his other question, though, about this fundraiser, there is a fundraiser tomorrow night. It's given by a guy named Andrew Goldman. He does hedge funds and stuff, but he also has a company called Western LNG. And their biggest project, which I think was announced in like 2018, is a floating liquefied facility for natural gas. It's off the coast of British Columbia, and it's going to provide Canadian gas to parts of northern Asia. So what Andrew is saying is, if you're going to a fundraiser that's given in part by this guy who has a company that is pulling up natural gas, are you the right guy to go after these
people? Well, I didn't realize he does that. If you look at the SEC filings, he's not listed as one of those executives.
Check again.
That's what we look at.
Check again.
SEC filings. Who are those executives? I've kept that pledge. Period.
No.
So is that...
No,
are you going to look at that fundraiser tomorrow night?
I'm going to look at what you just told me and find out if that's accurate. Yes.
Okay. So, I think it's pretty accurate.
It is accurate. So... What's the deal, Joe? You gonna go or no? Come on, Joe. Don't go. Do the right thing, Joe. Oh, no. Joe's gonna go. Headline, dated 1 hour ago on CNN.com. Joe Biden will attend a fundraiser co-hosted by a fossil fuel company founder. Story reads, Joe Biden has not canceled a Thursday fundraiser co-hosted by a founder of a fossil fuel company, despite criticism from climate activists who point to his pledge to turn money away from oil and gas industry executives. Biden is scheduled to attend two high-dollar fundraisers today in New York, one of which is being hosted by this guy, Andrew Goldman, a former aide in Biden's Senate office who co-founded Western LNG. For those who don't know, LNG stands for liquid natural gas. Yes, which comes from fracking. It's a Houston-based natural gas production and transportation company. Natural gas is a fossil fuel, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, because it was formed from the buried remains of plants and animals that lived millions of years ago. His schedule did not change Thursday, even after Biden said Wednesday that he might consider reconsider attending the fundraiser with Goldman. You know, Joe, I just got to say, Joe.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. Joe, go home.
Go to Joe 30330.
Joe.
30330.
Go.
Go to Joe 30330.
Come on, everybody, dance.
Here are a few important suggestions for the use of your dial telephone. Before calling any number, first secure the number from your new directory. Then remove the receiver and listen for the dial tone. It sounds like this. That tone indicates everything is ready for your call. With the receiver off the hook, dial the desired number. For example, suppose you want to dial 23650.
Yeah.
Dial each numeral in this manner,
okay,
pulling the dial around to the finger stop each time. Be sure to allow the dial to freely return to its normal position. And this is the ringing signal.
Joe
30330. Joe.
Joe.
No.
30330.
Joe, go home. Okay, so there you go, Joe. I can't help myself sometimes. So there you go. He doesn't give a shit. He just is going to this fundraiser tonight. Yeah, I know I took the no fossil fuels pledge, but what the fuck? I'm going to go take their money anyway. Okay, we got a lot to talk about. Today is Thursday. It means it's Howie Klein Day. Lots to talk with Howie about. There's news. I understand that for some reason, Progressive Voices today is running old editions of What's News. If we don't get to it during the body of today's show, I'll run it afterwards. But I don't know what to tell you about that. All I can do is produce them and upload them so they're there. So hopefully they'll start airing the right one. Anyway, before we get to any of that, we need to check in on what's happening in the UK. Oh, my God. Boris Johnson, is he in? Is he out? Is it Brexit? Is it no deal Brexit? Is it what the hell? So as we tend to do when things are going cuckoo over there, we turn to our friend, our correspondent on the ground in the UK. That would be Dennis Campbell. Well, lots of action in the UK today, the last few days. I don't quite know what to make of it. So we go to our man on the street. Dennis Campbell is an American expat living in Wales in the UK. And he's our go-to guy when shit hits the fan over there. And I would say this qualifies, Dennis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a double-barreled shot this time.
Oh, my God. So what is going on? The last we heard, well, just so you know, the last we heard... It was Boris Johnson, the new prime minister, even though nobody voted for him to be prime minister, went to the Queen and asked the Queen if he could dissolve Congress for about 6 weeks in order to prevent them from stopping him from enacting a no-deal Brexit. Do I have that right? So that's where it was until yesterday.
Yeah, well, the prorogue, as we call it, was supposed to start on the 14th of September. So that left them with roughly 10 days or so before they actually go into that state of suspended animation. The problem is that the parliament still had to meet this week. Uh-huh. And so this is Boris's third day of school. I think I tweeted out on his first day of school on Tuesday when they roundly rejected him. How's it going so far? Are you enjoying your new class? Are the teachers being nice to you? It doesn't look like all the kids are being nice to you. And yesterday was day three, and it has been just a slow-moving car crash for poor Boris, although nobody feels very sorry for him, in that he has been losing members of his party left and right to the Lib Dems and retirement, which sounds vaguely like what's going on in your Congress right now with the Republican Party.
Yeah, a little bit.
And on the first day of Parliament, he lost his majority as Mr. Lee, in the midst of his big speech, walked across the aisle most dramatically and sat down, scooched up, as we say, with the Lib Dems. And since then, we've had another key woman in the Tory party quit and join the Lib Dems, and another has quit altogether. The parliament, and the biggest one was the one that just went about 2 hours ago, and that would be the prime minister's brother, Joe Johnson. He has resigned from parliament. He is, and he was a minister, so he was a key advisor. And the reasons he gave, and I find this amazing because it's the first time I think a member of parliament has ever resigned to spend less time with their family. But that's the case here. He's basically said that he is fine. He has found himself torn between duty to country and duty to family. And you can read into that what you want, but he never wanted to go this route with a no-deal Brexit. He always felt it was too important a subject to play politics with. And it was one of those rare moments where somebody actually stood for the country as opposed to just the party.
This is amazing. I've heard so many different things that I'm not sure. I'm trying to pull it all together. So Boris Johnson wanted to call for a new vote, to thinking that he'll get his majority back if the people vote again.
Yeah, shades of Theresa May.
Yeah.
Remember, she called a snap election a few years ago
because
she felt that, well, now I'm prime minister. Of course they all love me, and we'll sort this right away by having an election. And she ended up losing her majority. And the only way she was able to keep it was by going into government with the Unionist Party, a conservative group in Northern Ireland. And they exacted £1 billion ransom, and, they lived happily ever after until they got tired of each other. And Theresa May has now gone. She's lost her seat, and I think that entire relationship is gone. But Mr. Lee walking across the Hall of Parliament to sit on the bench with the Liberal Democrats has created a massive, massive problem, because Boris no longer has a majority. And that happened on day one, when they were debating initially the no-deal Brexit bill, which is now sitting in the upper chamber, the House of Lords, being debated, and they've promised to pass it and get it back to Parliament by 5 p.m. on Friday.
Really? So
yeah, so that would end the no-deal Brexit altogether.
Oh, I see. To kill the no-deal Brexit. I gotcha. Right. I was confused.
And then yesterday—
Surprise, I was confused about this.
It got even more interesting because— basically Boris threw all his toys out of the stroller and got upset and said, okay, fine, then we'll have an election on the 16th of October. Now, most opposition parties would look at an election and say, good idea, we'll go for it and we'll beat them. But because there's such enmity and distrust and anger with how Boris has gone about this whole process of basically saying, we're going to do it come the 31st of October, no matter what. Nobody trusts Boris to live up to his end of the deal. And if you call an election, you've basically dissolved Parliament right then at that moment. And the fear is that he could then just go and do a no-deal Brexit and let the clock run out and not worry about it.
And that's what he wanted to do, right? That's what the whole thing of going to the Queen and asking for the, what's the term?
Proroguing. Well, he wanted the reason he went to the Queen was that he wanted to run the clock out on the no deal Brexit. But everybody came back to work on Tuesday, loaded for bear. And, you know, the first thing they did was they put the bill up for the no-deal Brexit. The second thing they did on Wednesday was they said, okay, you know, now that we've managed to debate all of these things and get the final vote through, we've now got the prime minister during question time without a majority to saying he's going to call an election. And most of the other parties are saying, hang on a second, that went to a vote yesterday. And even though it won, it did not win by a two-third majority, which is what's required to actually hold an election. So it's very intriguing that a number of members of the Labour Party just did not show up and vote because they don't trust Boris. They don't trust him to be a man of his word of any kind. And then today we had Joe Johnson, his brother, resign, as well as several others. So,
wow.
And remember, in order for that bill to fail for the no-deal Brexit, 21 members of his party had to cross the aisle and vote with everybody else.
Uh-huh.
And this was what's called a triple whip vote, which meant that instantly those 21 people were thrown out of the Tory party and not able to stand as conservatives in the next election. So that was it. That was his that was his majority gone. So he's bleeding from so many different wounds in his body. You just don't know where to start.
So Dennis Campbell, if there were to be another election called, does the Labour Party have a possibility of taking control? I know Jeremy Corbyn has been the target of a lot of smears. I don't know the reality of it. He's painted there as an anti-Semite. Is that true? Does he still have any power? And is there a chance that Labour could take back control?
Well, the problem we have right now is that the Labour candidate who would do the best of running the country is in New York City right now running a not-for-profit organization.
Who is that?
And that would be Ed's brother, David Miliband. He would be the logical leader of the party, and he would be the person that could take them through. Jeremy Corbyn has lost so much strength. He's lost so much power because of the anti-Semitism row, because he's allowed things to get out of control with just the whole dyed-in-the-wool socialist routine as opposed to the mid-level, the middle-of-the-road Blair, more right of center, but still slightly left of center party. And so he's been fighting for his survival for the last 4 years, ever since he was named party chairman. So most people are now of the opinion that since Labour is bleeding members left and right, we could actually see a situation where the Lib Dems come back up to 60, 70 seats, which is something that they haven't seen since they went into government with the Tories in 2010. And that poses all kinds of interesting problems for both the Conservatives and Labour, because they would need them in order to form a government. So it becomes a very interesting thing. And most of the people that have defected from the Tory party this week, and it really in the last several weeks, both from Labour and from the Tories, have all gone to the Lib Dems.
Huh. Okay. All right. So obviously lots of action. If Dennis Campbell, if you had to make a prediction, how do you think this thing is going to shake out?
I haven't been right yet, so God only knows. I mean, this has been one of those situations where you look at it and you think, okay, this has to make. Remember last time I was on, I said what really would make the most sense is that they just, you know, they call a new election, they get rid of Article 50, and they start all over from scratch with a second referendum. I still think some form of that will happen now because even though it's not dead, it's dramatically wounded. And earlier this week, the EU went so far as to say, we're not really stuck on that October 31st thing as a deadline. We can go, you know, even longer.
Oh, boy.
And yeah, which is fine because that's exactly what it would take to stop Boris Johnson altogether. If the European Union turns around and says, yeah, you know, January 1st is fine for us, that throws all of the wind out of his sail completely and gives the folks who want to have a second referendum a chance. And that that possibility has grown dramatically in the last week since we talked.
I would think that makes sense. I've got an off-the-wall question for you. I have a listener, a regular listener of the show, who sends me wonderful emails, and she's packing up and moving. She has taken her fill of Donald Trump and what he's done to this nation, and she's moving to the UK. Now, of course, after she decides to move and is in the process of going, Boris Johnson becomes prime minister. What advice would you give her? I mean, which is worse, the U.S. under Donald Trump or the U.K. under Boris Johnson?
I'd say it's sort of a name your poison sort of thing at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, Boris is bad, but there. You know, it was so funny. I saw a post on Twitter earlier today that's, you know, was basically someone standing up with the, you know, the sign, "Why is it taking so long to impeach Trump?" Yeah. And I looked at what's been going on and I said, God, we could be rid of Boris in a week the way things are going. So I wouldn't say it's completely bad. I think to come here without the protections of the whole European Union and the ability to settle in any one of 28 countries, you know, the ability to move freely across borders. And, you know, it used to be, yes, every country had these massive borders. Now, when you drive from France into Belgium, for example, it's like crossing the state line between Florida and Georgia. You don't even know you've done it. Uh-huh. Whereas before, you had to have your passports out. You had to make sure you had the right currency. You had to make sure, you know, all these things.
And
now,
that's coming back, between, right?
Yeah. Right. And that's what they're trying to go back to with all this nationalism crap. But the backstop problem in Ireland is real. The customs union is real. And I think those two things are affecting folks. And nobody, when they voted 3 years ago, had any idea that by voting to leave the European Union, all these things would, like dominoes, fall down as well. And we'd find ourselves completely isolated, running out of food, running out of medicines.
Oh, God, it just it sounds lovely. By the way, I know I mentioned this to you the last time we spoke, and I know you've got other things on your plate, but I'll bring it up again. This show on HBO, it's a six-episode miniseries, I guess, called Years and Years, and it's based in the UK. It begins about 5 years in the future and goes further into the future from there, and it's very political. It's based on, you know, basically the situation we're in now, 5 years in the future. And it's quite brilliant. And the thing is, it's very dark. It's tough to watch in places, but it has a good ending. So
so was Chernobyl. Yeah. I mean, tough to watch.
Yeah. Oh God. I mean, yes. Oh yes. But anyway, yeah,
but I mean, they do such good, television, and this thing aired in June, so I can't get it on my box anymore.
No.
I'd have to go out and buy it, but I'm thinking of doing that.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, search and see if it's available on demand anywhere, because I really want to get your take on it.
Okay.
All right. Anything else you feel compelled to share with us on this crazy day?
No, we're getting closer to the launch of our new podcast,
yes.
Into the Fire,
uh-huh.
And that'll be out hopefully in the next couple of weeks or so. We've got some interesting guests, and as we get closer, hopefully we'll get to talk about something other than Brexit in the future.
Cool. I can't wait. Well, as soon as you're ready to launch, of course, you'll come back on, and we'll talk all about it and let everyone know where they can hear it and all that. In the meantime, find Dennis Campbell on the Twitter machine at Client Loyalty DC, and wait for the other stuff, because it's all coming.
Oh, it is. You know, now I've been reading as we've been talking here, all of the labor people are getting in line now, and they're jumping up and down and saying that no, we're not going to go for a quick exit. So there'll be no filibuster in the House of Lords. So we've got some really good chances here that this could actually be for real and for change.
High drama coming up. And one other thing you're guaranteed is watch Jonathan Pye's YouTube channel, because I'm sure he'll be quite prolific in the coming days.
And Randy Rainbow.
Well, Randy Rainbow, he's so brilliant. Did you see his last one? He's not quite as prolific as Jonathan Pye, but Jonathan Pye doesn't do exorbitant productions either. He just does these stand-up, brutal rants. So there are two kind of different things. But anyway, I'm keeping an eye on Jonathan Pye for his
takedown. If you're ever over here, you have to see his stand-up show. His one-man
I would
show.
Love
it's really
to.
Quite well, good. And I just got my ticket for the last visit of the West Wing Weekly podcast here to London. So that'll happen in December. They're winding down. But if you've got West Wing fans out there, it's a great, great podcast where they've literally dissected every one of the 150-odd episodes.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, if you go on Hulu, you can watch the series from the beginning, too. Yep. So there's that. And by the way, we bought our tickets to see Randy Rain, but his last video convinced me that we need to go back and see him again. So he's playing in Miami Beach at the Fillmore on Friday night, October 18th. And so far, we have a group of six people going together. So anyone else in South Florida who's going, get in touch. I'll let you know what section we're in so we can all be, you know, neighbors and be rowdy together. All right. Dennis Campbell, thank you for keeping us up to speed over there. What a world, huh?
What a wonderful world it is.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So Dennis Campbell and I actually spoke this morning. He had to be somewhere tonight, so we taped that. I just got a message from him. He said, "Hey, Nicole, since we spoke, Boris had a meltdown speech this evening in Wakefield. Said he would rather, quote, rather be dead in a ditch than delay Brexit in a rambling speech." So there you go. I can't make this shit up. All right. I'm moving right along because we are running late. Is anybody mixing up the Dirty Debbies?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Yes, we love our Thursdays around here because not only do we get our fill of Dirty Debbies and all the free, sweet, and low we want, but we get Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America Pack. Hey, Howie.
You got me.
Yay. You sent me an article, a post that you're working on that'll go up tomorrow at Down With Tyranny. I'm sorry?
I'm writing it now. I'm working on that post. It's going to take a long time, but I expect it to go up tomorrow.
Okay, so hopefully it'll go up tomorrow at downwithtyranny.com, but it's something that we started talking about. It was either last week or the week before. We've spent a lot of time talking about the policy at the DCCC, which is the House re-election committee, as the party's House re-election committee. Now it seems to have moved over to the Senate's version. In the House, Cherry Bustos put this policy in effect that basically said, do not primary an incumbent member of Congress. If you do, we will blackball all of your vendors and consultants and, you know, the companies that work to support campaigns. We will blackball them from any further work within the DNC, within our party's nominees. Do I have that part right?
Not just firms, though. I mean, you know, firms maybe can take care of themselves in different ways. But the tragedy of this is they're also going after political operatives, so people who work in the political field as individuals who aren't necessarily part of a firm. And one of the tragedies here is a lot of these are younger people, a lot of them are women, a lot of them are people of color, and they're the ones that the DCCC and the DSCC now are going after and basically making a very public attempt to ruin their careers.
This is amazing. So the DSCC even took it a step further because they're not just saying you can't primary a sitting senator, as they're doing in the House, they're saying once we decide, we being Chuck Schumer and company, this means exactly. The party proper. Chuck, once we decide, once I decide, Chuck Schumer, on a candidate, if you work with any other candidate who wants to enter a primary with this person, even though that person may not hold any office at the moment, you'll still be blackballed. Right.
That's right. And in some cases, I mean, just think in terms for a minute of Colorado. There have been people running in Colorado for close to a year. They've mm-hmm. been in the race. They've got their team. They have, their campaign manager and their campaign treasurer and you know, dozens of people who are working for them and have been for months and months because John Frackenlooper said he wasn't going to run. He over and over again, he said, I would make a terrible senator. I'm not going to run. I'm running for president.
Right.
And he was a laughingstock in his presidential campaign. He ended the campaign with a 0.3 approval, not approval, but you know that
was his standing in the polls.
0.3 of the people who were surveyed on average said they would vote for him. That's about the bottom of the bucket.
Wow.
He had been the governor of Colorado twice. So this guy has got no traction at all. And now Schumer has decided, just Chuck Schumer, that he is the candidate for Senate. So this guy for a year was saying he wouldn't run. If he ran, he'd be and was elected, he'd be a terrible senator. And other people took that as a cue that he's not going to run, and they decided to run. So now there's almost a dozen candidates. One dropped out though this week, running. And so what Schumer is doing is saying, quit. He's saying to all the campaign managers, all the finance directors, all the PR person. He's not offering them jobs. He's saying to them, quit working for the person you've been working for all year, or we'll blackball you for the rest of your career. And he's not saying to them, come work for us instead. He's just saying,
don't do that.
Go find a job somewhere else if you can. This is like, what is this? This is like a democracy?
No.
Chuck Schumer is horrible. He is like absolutely horrible. I mean, at this point, if he's backing a candidate, unless it's proven otherwise, I just have to assume that whoever he's backing is terrible.
Right.
That's Schumer.
This is the opposite of democracy, Howie Klein. I mean, this is what we fight against. This is a dictatorship. This is Chuck
That's
Schumer.
It's a real thing. It's Chuck Schumer. I have said it. I have told you over and over again, and your listeners. I went to high school with this guy. He was hated in high school. He hasn't changed. He's the exact same Chuck Schumer now that he was in the mid 1960s.
So here's the problem we have. The way I look at it, Howie, is that we have no leader of the Democratic Party. It's usually
Bernie.
Well, yeah, Bernie. But Bernie does not have the power to go to Chuck Schumer and say, cut this shit out. Nobody does. I guess if we still had a Democrat in the White House, that person could. But right now, there's nobody who can go to Chuck Schumer and say, this is undemocratic. This is not the way we do things. How do we get this across to him, aside from taking to the streets in front of his house and office?
Well, first of all, every single Democratic senator should be telling
yes,
him that.
Yes, they should.
So if you're represented by a Democratic Senate. Now, obviously, you can't go to some rot-gut conservative like Dianne Feinstein.
Right.
But if you have a Democratic senator, you should tell him or her that they should talk to Chuck. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to elect Bernie or elect Elizabeth Warren, who are likely to tell him that they don't want this kind of thing. And hopefully, this kind of carrying on by him, if it fails, maybe he will be overthrown by the Democrats when they come back in 2021. And when I say if it fails, like for example, Blue America is backing a whole lot of candidates. There'll be more coming in the next few weeks. A whole lot of candidates who are running for the Senate, and those not the Chuck Schumer candidates. Well, if those candidates get elected, hopefully those candidates will be not predisposed to towards voting for Chuck Schumer to be leader in 2021. So that's, of course, what I'm hoping for. That's
right.
Never happened before, but you never can tell.
But the problem, there's a problem in the candidates that Chucky Schmucky is choosing on our behalf. Just look at what happened in 2018, where he chose Kyrsten Sinema to be the senatorial candidate from Arizona. She now, as you tell us every week, has the worst record in the U.S. Senate, surpassing even Joe Manchin to be the worst of the so-called Democrats in the Senate. He chose Jackie Rosen in Nevada to be the candidate. She won, but you want to tell us about what's her name?
Jackie Rosen.
Jackie Rosen.
She was a terrible member of the House who was, she had an F at all times from a progressive punch. She was, one of the worst members of the House. The worst member of the House was Kyrsten Sinema, but she was close.
Yep.
And now she's she's the third or fourth worst member, definitely in the top five, but not number five. She's either the third or fourth, has the worst record in the Senate. Terrible. And since she has no brain whatsoever, not even a little one, Chuck Schumer appointed her to be the head of the DSCC.
Which is the group that's doing this nonsense.
He doesn't even have to consult with her. He runs it. She's the de facto, I don't even know if de facto is the appropriate word there. She's the titular head of the DSCC.
Wow.
Now, he used to be the head of the DSCC. Schumer was. And then once Harry Reid decided to retire, he left the DSCC and he became the head of the House of the Senate Democrats. Now this Jackie Rosen is he just picked the person who he would be able to
control.
Say, jump exactly inches.
Right.
We'll jump exactly 3 inches.
That's right.
She's the most likely to be that. She isn't someone who thinks. She isn't someone who has any kind of a mind of her own at all. None, zero, nothing. So she's the head. So, it's silly to even chastise her because he's so bad. Rasmussen is a
Republican
is a really
leading
bad polling firm.
Right.
It's worthless. It's
right.
A Republican polling firm.
But
they have an interesting poll that they released today. Which goes into the fact that Trump is going to lose. That's a really rare thing for them to say. It's Trump's favorite polling firm. He always points to them. And they said, Trump, people are not going to vote for Trump. But what they point out is that the reason they're not going to vote for Trump is because of Trump. It has nothing to do with the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
People don't feel the Democrats have much to offer. I'm not talking about the individual candidates.
Right.
I just mean the Democratic Party.
Well, look at leadership.
They're voting against Trump just because it's Trump. That's the reason.
Right.
And his coattails are going to be reverse coattails. He's going to drag the Republican Party down with him. They deserve it. It's what I've been talking about for the last year or so about there is no blue wave. The media calls it a blue wave because the DCCC and the DSCC and the DNC call it a blue wave. But there was no blue wave. There was an anti-red wave, a very big anti-red wave. And that's exactly what's building now, another anti-red, anti-Trump wave. Now, if Bernie is the nominee or if Elizabeth Warren is the nominee, then that changes. Then you get a combination of the same anti-red wave and you then get a real blue wave, something
because
that
you get
we don't
the,
normally get.
You know, this
it's
is
always a lesser of two evils. That's
right,
all the
right.
DSCC and the DCCC even knows how to do is just lesser of two evils.
Right. And for once, for the first time really in my lifetime, I'll have the opportunity, I hope, to vote for a presidential candidate instead of just voting against the other guy. Because all I've ever done is cast against votes. The first time I voted for Obama, I thought I was voting for him. But, that went away kind of fast.
Same with me. Exactly the same with me. I had, even though I knew Obama's voting record in the state Senate in Illinois, and then the U.S. Senate, I knew he was poor. He was such a good hustler.
Yeah,
he had
really
such
was.
A good way of discussing this
hope
stuff.
Hope and change.
That I even got sold on him.
Yeah, I hear it. Well, but now
I should have known better when he picked the worst U.S. senator to be his running mate, Biden.
Uh-huh. Well, there were worse. He could have picked
Lieberman
Joe Manchin.
Available, so he picked Joe Biden, the worst of all, the most conservative guy he could find.
And Joe Biden, oh my God, we could go for hours about Joe Biden. But I want to ask you about something else. I sent you a transcript of this conversation on Facebook that is very, to me, disconcerting. It's with some former radio colleagues of mine. So they're music people. These are not the
mine. I've known some of these guys for decades.
I know you have. That's why I brought it up. And so one of them, who is a big-time radio programmer, he posts a picture of Elizabeth Warren. This was last night during the climate forum over on CNN, and he writes, her voice shakes and she's way, W-A-A-A-A-Y, all in caps, too handsy, gestury, no confidence in her. And then he added, and she bought her polyester coat at the Star Trek convention on the discount rack. To which I responded,
it'd be funny, right?
What's that?
I guess he was trying to be funny?
No, he was being serious. And I responded and I said, my God, how about listening to what she's actually saying instead of dissing her voice and appearance? Or perhaps you people, just like having a narcissistic, idiotic megalomaniac in the White House, grow the fuck up. Now, yeah, I could have been a little more.
tell me this guy is a Trump supporter.
No, he's not a Trump supporter. That's the thing. But his argument to me is that this is all show business. Let me find you. It's just mind-blowing. He said, it wasn't an attack on you, so please don't attack me. She has been proven to have some credibility issues. I just don't like her coat. And I said, wasn't intended as an attack, but really.
This can't be real.
It is real.
I mean, he doesn't like her coat. He's kidding around with you.
Right. No, it's not. I said, her voice and her jacket, really? And he said, it's an opinion. Our opinions are colored by the impressions we make. Everyone makes impressions. I made one on you to where you told me to grow the fuck up, and that has made an impression on me as well. Then another former programmer, a former boss of mine, jumped in on the conversation, and he started the mansplaining right away. He said, Nicole, as an observer to this conversation, it appears that your emotions are running amok. Please step back a second and see this for what it is. Whether the other guy was joking or not, he makes a very good point. Is she somebody who will attract votes? Can she win? If her voice grates on people, and I'm not saying it does, I'm saying if her voice is annoying to some people, then there's a very good chance that they won't hear her message. I think that in the end, we would all like the same thing here. Someone, anyone other than who we have running the country. In my opinion, the Dems are doing one hell of a job of potentially fucking this thing up, is what I guess he's saying. And then I said, I prefer my political choices based on substance. Thank you. And he said, do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? Honestly, ask yourself, can she beat him? Is an election ever truly about substance? Is life fair? Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? I'm apoplectic right now over this because that's like a bullshit question. And I went through my response about what primary season is about. And it's something you and I, Howie, talk about all the time. Primaries are to get the best candidate possible, not to settle for somebody who, I don't know, what fits the central casting roll call. This is what's frustrating about talking to people who don't pay attention to politics about politics.
That's the main point.
Yep.
I was going to jump in and say that anyway. You and me, both of us, look at issues all the time. And they mean something to us. But these guys, you know, they're doing whatever they do. I'm not criticizing them necessarily for it, but they're not paying attention to issues.
Not
so
at
instead,
all.
Guy number one, I don't remember his name, you know, is saying that her coat annoys him or her voice grates on him.
And her hand gestures. She's too hand gestury.
I thought Beto was the hand gesture.
But her voice
but
is
you didn't
too
bring
squeaky.
This up. I don't know why, but you haven't brought up anywhere in the stuff you sent me and anywhere that I've heard you today. I don't know why you haven't brought it up, but these guys sound like a little bit misogynistic, especially the guy number one.
Absolutely. And yet when he was called out on that, he took exception to that. I don't understand it, but it is misogynistic. If he doesn't like her voice and her jacket, was he going to say anything like that about, Tim Ryan's got a really annoying delivery? I mean, the whole thing just makes no sense. And again, they're telling me this is all show business, that the issues don't matter. It's all about show business. I'm going through this conversation went on and on and on and on and on, and it got more insane as it went on. They're saying that, you know, forget about the primary fight, forget about the issues, because if you're not electrifying enough and I guess good looking enough, then people aren't going to pay attention to you.
She's really good looking.
I think Elizabeth Warren's good looking.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
What is it, Stormy Daniels? I mean, the point is, first of all, I want to just say I have never once gotten into a fight with anybody on Facebook. Uh-huh. I really recommend highly that you don't do it. But let's leave that on the side. And this just sounds like a misogynistic argument that this guy is making. I mean, I sometimes have to hold myself back from just thinking something. I don't even say anything to anyone. I'm about to say it to everybody now. But when Chris Hayes, whose show I love,
yeah,
has near a tendon on.
Ugh, near a tendon. Horrible.
It off. I can't stand the sound of
TV goes off. Zerlina Maxwell, too. I'm gone. It's those things just automatically get push the button on my remote.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that one's Maxwell's voice. Talking about thing.
Near a tandem, I hear you.
Tandem has a very high pitched voice, yeah, and it's a very annoying, like cloying, like catchy voice.
Yep.
So that I can't hear what she says. I'm being honest now. With these guys that you're fighting with, or the first one anyway, I understand where he's coming from. He doesn't know the issues, which is a shame. He should, but he doesn't have time apparently to study them. So instead, he's just reacting to the easiest thing he can react to,
yeah,
which is, you know, the way she looks, the way she sounds to him.
Mm-hmm.
Is a terrible way to pick a president, but I have a feeling that there are a lot of other people who are the same way. Now, not necessarily in terms of Elizabeth Warren,
yep,
but in terms of any candidate.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, I know when I hear Trump speaking, no matter what he's saying, I mean, you know, what he's saying is bad enough. It's plenty bad. But forget what he's saying. Forget the content of what he's saying. Just the way he speaks. You know, I just see a hustler. I hear that voice and my skin crawls. Literally, it's disgusting to hear him. I can't stand to hear him. I can't stand to look at him. Similar to what this guy is telling you.
Yeah. No, I hear you, and that's sad. But if it was based on, I don't like the way she plans on, you know, doing Medicare for all. It's not quite what, it's not. It has nothing to do with the issues. He doesn't like the way she dresses. He doesn't like the way she sounds. He doesn't like the way she uses her hands. And it's all show business.
And I'm afraid that he isn't the only one. When he says it's all show business, I think when we were kids, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now, especially after Trump, it really is all show. I mean, it's not all show business, thank God. But it is partially show business.
I agree.
Much more than it should be. The media presents it as show business.
Right.
Especially in the Trump era. And I see where he's coming from. Well, I mean, I obviously agree with every word of what
right.
he's saying.
But here's the thing to look at then. If it's show business, why wouldn't you want the candidates who are drawing the big crowds, who are generating excitement and enthusiasm? Because the only ones
that would be Trump.
Well, but on the left, on the Democratic side, the only ones I see doing that are Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So there it is, show business. You go for who's generating excitement.
I remember a friend of mine, an old friend from elementary school, who's gay. And he is just so infatuated with Beto.
Oh.
that he doesn't want to know about anything else except Beto, because he thinks Beto is so handsome.
Yeah.
And he donates money to him. He's going to vote for him, and doesn't have a clue of what Beto stands for.
Oh God, we're
people,
so tuned.
People will vote on every kind of thing that we never think of. It's shocking. I have to come up against it every day in my blogging.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to me, it just seems so obvious that it's about the issues. You know, where do you stand on Medicare for All? Where do you stand on the Green New Deal? Those are the issues of the day. Where do you stand on assault weapon ban?
Yeah.
And some just roll their eyes and they, you know, they talk about someone's coat.
Yeah, I know. All right, that's why I take a deep
breath.
That's
literally insane.
Have some medical marijuana, calm down, and, you know, I don't know. I try to inform people. That's all I can do. And I don't mean to be argumentative. It's, I guess, just my nature. Anyway, Howie Klein, as always, thank you so much. We'll do it again next week.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Howie Klein, of course, you find him. He blogs at downwithtyranny.com. But he also runs the Blue America PAC, which they find and they vet and they help raise money for the best progressive candidates out there. Tomorrow, the great Will Bunch joins us from Philadelphia. Until then, thanks for listening, everyone. And keep the faith, baby. Bye-bye.